So if you would like to turn to in 1 Samuel, we have been we have some of our teachers that have been downstairs or upstairs and have some visitors. We have been talking about David and Saul. The time frame that we're in was the United Kingdom is what we've been talking about, and that roughly spans about 120 years. We might get into the divided kingdom just before Dwayne takes over. But the main thing is we need to finish up this time period that we're talking about in the United Kingdom. We had been in 1 Samuel, and we were towards the very end of the book. We were in chapter 30, and we had just talked a little bit about David's men, and I had asked the question if they would all be considered God-fearing men, and we know there that we had read that they weren't. There in, what was it, verse 22, it talked a little bit about these men. It says, "Then all the wicked and worthless men of those who went with David answered and said." So we know that at this time David had some, as it says, wicked and worthless men working with him. So we just had taken note of that. And then we had David's response there in verses 23 through 25. And we talked a little bit about that. We were just getting into chapter 31 in the final chapter there in 1 Samuel. And we see Saul's sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, if I'm saying that correctly. They were all killed by the Philistines. There in verses 2 and 3, it says, "Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, Saul's sons. Now the battle became intense against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers." So most of us probably remember this story about him being wounded here. So what does he command his arm bearer to do? Yeah, run him through and kill him. And would his arm bearer do that? You know, didn't want to do it. And why did he want him to do that? Why did he want him to kill him? I mean, might seem obvious just because nobody wants to be taken or killed.
He said he was greatly afraid.
Okay, he was greatly afraid. And what?
He didn't want to be abused by the...
Yeah, I think if I remember, it says something about... so that these uncircumcised fellows wouldn't abuse him, and his arm bearer was terrified. He wouldn't do it, and so Saul took his own life. There in verse 4 it says, "And Saul said to the arm bearer, 'Draw your sword and thrust it through thrust me through with it, lest the uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me.' But his arm bearer would not do it, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took the sword and fell on it." So Saul fell on his own sword, and then what happened just after that? What's his own arm bearer do? Yeah. So then he basically follows suit, and so they die together on the same day, the same way, basically. As we study through these accounts, you know, we come across some similarities in stories, and this is no different. We had just read previous to this in 1 Samuel chapter 4 a similar event where we had a father and sons die on the same day, and that was Eli and his sons. Remember, we had his sons Phinehas and Hophni had all died on the same day. And so, again, we see that the Israelites here in verse 7 heard what had happened to Saul and his sons, and they had abandoned their towns and fled, leaving them, you know, open for occupation for the Philistines. So, what did the Philistines do? Well, they did just exactly that. They basically went in these empty towns and took them over and occupied them. And the Philistines, we read in the story where they would come and they were going to strip the dead and take whatever they could from them. Well, they came across Saul and his three sons, and they cut off Saul's head and stripped him of his armor. And if we'll skip down there in chapter 31, verse 10, it says, "Then they put his armor in the temple of the Ashtaroths, and they fastened the body to the wall of Bethshan." And so we have them taking his head off and taking his armor off and then fastening him to this wall of Beth Shan. So when the people of Jabesh Gilead had heard about this, they're valiant men, or they're men of war, journeyed through the night just so they could get there and remove the bodies of Saul and his sons from this wall. And when they did, they carried them to Jabesh. And does anybody remember what they did to the bodies? Yep, so they burned them, and then they buried their bones under a tree, a tamarisk tree. And we find all that in verses 11 through 13. And then immediately following that, they fasted for 7 days. Okay, does anyone have any thoughts before we get into 2 Samuel? And again, we're still in the United Kingdom. I think Tad had pointed out there was moments of, we call this the United Kingdom, but it was soon to become divided. And there's instances we read, and you can see that coming upon them.
The people from Jabesh Gilead, these were the ones that had the Ammonites come against them, and Saul kind of came to the rescue and tore up the oxen.
That's right.
He said, "You better help these guys, or
this is going to happen to you." That is interesting. Possibly a little repayment, but yeah, you're right. When he cut up the oxen and sent them out, and said, "This is going to happen to you if you don't, if you're not careful."
His body was a trophy.
That's
he
right.
Was the king. And when you destroy the king, if you show his head to everybody, then there's no doubt that this deal about hanging the bodies on the wall, we think that's pretty cruel. It is. It hadn't changed a bit.
No.
When the war started in Afghanistan, what did they do with our troops if they come?
Sure.
They
made it public,
hung their bodies on a bridge.
Yeah, that nothing has changed. So it's like I say, it's kind of a trophy or a sign that look what we've done.
It's a really sad end for someone that God had chosen to be the people's first king.
Yeah.
He was anointed.
Yeah.
It's really been downhill.
Fast, yeah, towards the very end. Yeah. Yeah, what did it say about him, about serving? Did it say he served God all the days of his life? Or he served the people. We read that. And so, yeah, like you say, kind of a pretty tragic end for somebody that was chosen and had a pretty good reign for a while. But okay, let's go into 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel begins with David's hearing of Saul's death. And interesting enough, I think, we find in 2 Samuel the account right away of a man claiming to be an Amalekite, who had escaped this Israelite camp. And when questioned by David, he admitted to killing Saul. Remember this? At his request, which completely goes against what we just read and found in 1 Samuel chapter 31, verses 3 and 4. So we're not going to go back through that. And if we go into 1 Chronicles accounts, they're a mirror image, basically. But we see there that it's repeated, just almost the story identical. Chapter 10 also records Saul's suicide there in 1 Chronicles. And there is no such mention of an Amalekite, as we know. I mean, you read that. So this guy was basically, just lying. Does anyone remember what happened to this guy, this man that was telling this lie?
I think David puts him to death, didn't he?
Yeah. David commanded him to be struck down and killed. And I guess what was the reasoning for the command? Of course, that may seem obvious, but... okay, yeah. So the Lord's anointed one had been, killed. But the guy was lying about it, but... So he was bragging about it, or telling that he had done it, so commanded that he'd be struck down, which is...
His motive was probably, he thought David then would...
maybe build him up, or...
after him, even though David wouldn't kill him, but maybe he thought David would make him some kind of a high servant in his kingdom.
I think he thought he would be rewarded because he brought the crown he brought the crown and the ring with him.
Yeah, but for sure, yeah.
To David, you know, like I've saved this for you, reward.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of interesting. Yeah, his plan clearly backfired. I don't think that's what he had thought would happen.
He probably ran across on the battlefield.
Oh, sure.
Pick the first one by after he saw him dead and picked him up and thought, wow.
Yeah, look what I've got. Yeah. And then come up with a story and it backfired. Yeah, Ben.
Of course, we know Saul killed himself.
Yeah.
We do have some indication as to who it was that started that whole process. In 2 Kings, the 5th chapter, verse 1, it says, "Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria." And we don't know exactly what that means.
No.
What does it mean that by him the Lord had given victory to Syria? One possible answer is that it was Naaman who shot the arrow that wounded Saul. We don't know that.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lot more plausible than what this guy is.
Right. Well, we know, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I thought there in chapter 31 we may have had a little more. Well, you know, when you read something, you can't put your finger on it. But yeah, very possible. Okay. Okay, so chapter 2, David inquired of the Lord if he should go to Judah, and what did God instruct him to do? Told him to go to Hebron. And so he took his people took the people and the men with him and their families. And the men of Judah anointed David as king over the house of Judah. We see that in verse 2 there. It says, yeah.
I need to correct myself.
Okay.
I'm getting two kings confused here. This was not Saul. That was,
okay.
That was Ahab, I believe.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
These were Philistines, and he was the Syrian.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to think about what I just said.
Well, I was going to go back and research it, but that's okay.
You're right.
Okay. Good. Okay. So you're in 2 Samuel chapter 4, and thanks for clarifying, because it was in my mind, so I was thinking, well, I'll have to go back and look. No problem.
All right. In verse 4, though, it said, "Then the men of Judah came, and there they anointed King David over the house of Judah, and they told David, saying, 'The men of Jabesh Gilead were the ones who buried Saul.'" And then in his first kingly act, we might say, he sent messengers to Jabesh Gilead to command them for their kindness and in burying Saul, and he told them that he would show them favor, kind of what Eric was talking about earlier, for this act, and moreover ask God for his favor on them, as he tells them that he has been anointed king over Judah. And then, someone just in general, what happened to the northern tribes at this point? Anybody remember? If we go to verse 7, it says, "Now therefore let your hand be strengthened and be valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them." Abner had brought... And I don't know if I'm saying it right, but Ishbosheth, which is one of Saul's sons, if you remember, over to Mahanaim, and made him king over Gilead. And so if we read through this, he was king over Gilead, Ashuri, and Jezreel, and then Ephraim and Benjamin. He was over all of Israel. And then, I guess... question, next logical question you probably need to ask is, who was Abner? Do you remember who Abner was?
Abner was the right-hand man to Saul.
Okay, yeah. So right-hand man of Saul. He was the commander of Saul's army. And if you recall, it was he who David had called when David called him up last week when we talked about how his life was spared, if you remember that. He spared Saul's life. Remember, he was the one that took the water jug and the weapon, and actually kind of teased Abner with it about his ability to protect the king. If you remember that story we got into. If we go down to verse 10, it says, we get into a little bit of age and talk about
time he reigned. It says, Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 4 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. Only the house of Judah followed David. So he reigned 2 years, and the house of Judah followed David, and he reigned from Hebron for about 7.5 years. As we continue down in chapter 2 there, he continues this warring between the house of David and Saul, and we find the men here confronting each other. And then verse 12 says, "Now Abner the son of Ner, the servants of Ish-bosheth the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon." And so, you know, again, we just see this warring continue, and then actually in Saul's territory there of Gibeon, we see it might suggest that Joab and his troops were gaining ground to the north. And you have to read through all this to kind of, and it's pretty tricky. The names get tougher and tougher. But Abner in verse 14 suggests what I call kind of a good old duel, the best of the best going against, I guess, the best of the best. They chose 12 men from each tribe. And what happens to these 12 men? Of course, they were the youngest and the best. But does anybody remember what happened?
We're like grabbing by the head.
Yeah, so, but all 12 men grab each other. You kind of get the feeling simultaneously they grab each other, and they both sets, I guess, so all 12 men run each other through, and so all the best men fell. There in, let's see, verse 16 says, "And each one grasped his opponent by his head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side, so they fell down together. Therefore, the place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is in Gibeon." What a weird deal. So, it's your best guy, and they all go down together.
It's just not on me. I thought we were in the divided kingdom. And when was the division made between Israel and Judah? Or is Israel called all the tribes except Judah? Which we know when it divides out, it's Judah and Benjamin against all the rest, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're clearly...
I think you're really in the
proposed.
The actual division happens after Solomon. Because of Solomon's sin, that's what officially divided the kingdom. But obviously, there's stuff going on the whole time.
Yeah, so that's why I kind of prefaced when we started. It's becoming the divided kingdom, but... To your point, after Solomon, so we're close, but I don't think we're there yet.
It's becoming that because there are people that siding with Saul.
Right.
And it's natural that the king's sons usually follow them after their death. And but we know that David was anointed as king, and some recognize that.
Yeah.
Or at least Judah, I guess.
Judah did. Yeah.
And so it's going to take a little process here.
Right.
And I guess you're going to talk about
that. Well, that's the thing. We're kind of in that process of where that all takes place. I was going to make a comment after this, let's pick the best, the 12 best against your 12 best. Do we read of a duel like this anywhere else that you can think of? And that's probably a little misleading because you might be thinking the number. You might be thinking, well, 12 against 12. But we're going to read, we're going to take our guy against your guy.
Who David is Goliath.
There you go. And I was thinking about, Goliath, that was the whole deal. Well, I'm the best, so, bring me your best and let's go at it and throw a lens. Of course, they bring the little kid.
It's interesting, though, that who they chose these from. It didn't say Israel and Judah. It said Benjamin and the servants of David.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still kind of, it's still kind of hard to understand how the division of that was going on, who actually was involved in which side.
Or Benjamin.
Well, they were divided under David for over 7.5 years.
Yeah.
If you look over chapter 5, verse 5, it says in Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. There was a war between the house of David and the house of Saul for over a year because they would not accept David as their king.
Yeah, I mean,
that's all of it.
Right.
3-1 says exactly that.
3-1. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. I think I had that down as a key verse. Yep.
Good.
Okay. What Dwayne was saying, the way I understand it is back in 2:15, the men were all from Benjamin because that was Saul's tribe, right? And they were probably just sticking up for him. Like Bob said, you would think the next king would come from them. So maybe where it says it was the 12 for Benjamin and 12 for David, so they were all from Benjamin because they were sticking up for Saul.
I guess this is the thing that's kind of, this we even mentioned Benjamin, because Benjamin then was within with the tribe of Judah after Solomon's time. When the divided kingdoms came along, wasn't it Judah and Benjamin
side together
that were together? Mm-hmm. And then the other 10 were called Israel. And it, but,
so, yeah.
You know,
it was
this
lots of years down the road.
Yeah.
This is just part of the breakup. I mean, it was part of the...
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess when you think about it, hardly anything just literally happens overnight. I mean, there's no truth. There was a cutoff point, or you know, where we can't divide, but, you know, it happens over time. And it's, I mean, clearly we're reading about some of the things that are leading up to that.
It's interesting to me why, you know, here's David that God chose.
Yeah.
Okay, he chose him years before this, before he ever actually took over as king of Judah, and then the majority of the people rejected him. So, you know, why do you think God didn't have David, you know, destroy this, the rest of the people, or cause them in some way to recognize him as king? Yet he let this war go on for 7.5 years.
Yeah.
And I know he had reasons for doing that, but seems a little odd.
Yeah. Well, because we clearly know that the Lord could have caused him to just, like I say, exterminate that group that was against him.
Could have done several things,
yeah.
But he couldn't fight it out.
I don't know that we know every reason that those things happened, but for sure it was. Okay.
I wonder, but it's just real quick here, I wonder how many people actually knew David was anointed. I mean, it's not like in our day and time, if somebody was anointed king, he'd be all over the airwaves. We know about it instantly, but how many people really knew about the incident when he was anointed? And then I'm sure stories are told, but there could be a lot of people that might not even believe that, you know.
We know, though, that part of the reason Saul tried to kill David was because the people knew David was to be king, or at least most of the people around Saul did. And they were singing songs about how many David killed and Saul wasn't being hit, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So
they would, I mean, a pretty good percent would know, like I say.
Yeah. You can imagine by this time that many people had remembered the words of Samuel in his warning of what would happen when
that's
they
right.
came. I'm sure
wrong one.
Regretting it, and then this war goes on, and
can
remember the prophet's words.
Yep. Okay, good point. All right. So, of course, we know that the battle ensued, and of course, it was fierce, and it was growing. In verse 17, it says, "So there was a very fierce battle that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David." So they were, David's men were defeated, they defeated Abner's men, and then we learned about Joab's brothers, Abishai and Asahel, in verse 18, and that Asahel was swift, and he chased Abner, who warned and warned, and finally killed him, because he wouldn't stop pursuing him. And so the other two brothers pursued Abner all the way, it says, to the wasteland of Gibeon, as it was called there in verse 24. So if you skip on down, it says, Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner. And the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Hamah, which is before Gia, by the road to the wilderness of Gibeon. And so they pursued him. And then Benjamin's men rallied behind Abner, as he shouted to Joab, and Abishai to stop. and we see where Joab blew the trumpet for the men to stop, and they pursued no more. And which is kind of interesting. So that's how that chapter basically ends. He blew that trumpet and told men that was the sign to stop pursuing, and so they pursued no more. Chapter 3, the war went on a long time, and David continued to grow, and that was the verse I was going to read here, stronger and stronger, while Saul's side was growing weaker and weaker. And Abner began to strengthen his position, much like his father Saul. Ish-bosheth became jealous and called him out by accusing him of doing what? Somebody remember?
This is a real problem.
Yeah. Sleeping with Saul's concubine. Okay? So he makes this accusation. And so with this accusation, Abner began a plan to turn Israel over to David. And was Abner really qualified for to be able to make this agreement? Was he king? No.
He was the commander of the army, though.
Yeah.
So he had a little bit of...
He did. Yeah, it just made me wonder, though, if he was really... should he have been making that agreement? But either way, like I say, whether he was or not, he wasn't the king, but he was the commander. He had been elevated to the point of power, as Tad said. And if we recall, he was actually who placed Ish-bosheth in the king's position in the first place. So he was the one that actually put him in that king's position. And he was outside of the birth line, I guess, or outside of the actual birth line.
Politically speaking, though, he had more power than the actual appointed king.
Oh, yeah, done. Yeah.
Sure. Well, as far as God was concerned, he was doing the right thing because David was the rightful king.
Yeah.
By defecting to David, he was actually doing the right thing.
Yeah.
In verse 11, it says he was afraid of
it. Yeah, right. Which is fine, because like I said, so he's still in his power, but he was afraid, yeah. Since he feared him. Abner, yeah, couldn't answer another word because he feared him. David had met with Abner, and they came to an agreement. And then if you go down to verse 24, it says, then Joab came to the king and said, "What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away and he is already gone?" So we find Joab here, you know, really angry because David has let Abner go after their agreement and he left in peace. And remember, Abner had just killed his brother Ahazael, I guess is how you say it, or Asahel. And Joab, also being in power of positions, as David's commander, he sent messengers for Abner, and when they pulled him aside to speak privately, what did he do? Well, let's just come over here and speak privately. He killed him. So, and that's what ends chapter 3. Does anybody have any comments about any of that up to this point? And I know we're kind of fast-forwarding to seeing the high points.
I start to get confused over who's who. Yes. I mean, it's starting to branch out and all the stories coming out. I almost felt to have a kind of lineage up on the board to kind of figure out
which side, what side,
which family.
Well, if I rereading it, it's taken a lot just for me to understand. You're right, I think that would help. And that's something I need to probably focus on doing, because it would have helped me to diagram it out versus trying to remember it.
This issue here, really, this is not an act of war. You know, Joab tries to make it look like, you know, I'm protecting you. You know, he's acting like, David, you don't know. This guy's a secret spy.
Yeah.
And in the name of, you know, in the name of war, I'm going to kill this guy. He really murdered him.
Yeah.
Because he wanted revenge for his brother.
Right. Yeah.
And later on, that's going to play an important role.
Right. Okay, so chapter 4, we just said about 5 minutes or so. Chapter 4 tells of Ish-bosheth's murder, again, by two men who were leaders of Saul's raiding band, and they brought his head to David. And David, as we learned, he didn't care for this and their methods. And so what did he do? What did he do to their lives? He had their lives taken. there in verse 4. And here you have an explanation. Of course, if you just want to read those first few verses. But in verse 4 it says, Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame in his feet. He was 5 years old, and when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. So his name was Mephibosheth. All right? And so that gives you a little background on why he was crippled. And then, I don't know if there's... And I could just fast forward to chapter 5, and I was going to read the first 5 verses here. It says, "Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and spoke, saying, Indeed, we are your bone and your flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel out and brought them in. And the Lord said to you, You shall shepherd my people Israel and be ruler over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king of Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them at Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 30 years. 4 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah." And then we have in verses 6 through 16 speak a little bit about David's immediate conquering of Jerusalem and defeating the Jebusites who lived there. And then we see, let's go on down here. Then in verse, let me go back. Verse 8 and 9, we have some interesting advice. It says, "Now David said on that day, Whoever climbs up by the way of the water shaft and defeats the Jebusites, the lame and the blind, who are hated by David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. Therefore, they say, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So David dwelt in the stronghold and called it to the city, it the city of David. Then David built all around them from the Milo and inward." So, interesting advice there. And then continuing there in that same chapter, we see David inquiring of the Lord in verse 19, if you go on down. "And David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hand? And the Lord said to David, Go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into your hand." So God grants him victory once again over the Philistines. And then I was going to go, and does anybody have any thoughts before I go into Chronicles? I wanted to go over into 1 Chronicles. In chapters 11 and 12, we find a listing here of David's mighty men, who along with the help, had given them victory, and helped David develop his strong support as king. It says, let me go here to... chapter 11, verse 10 says, "Now these were the heads of the mighty men whom David had, who strengthened themselves with him in the kingdom, with all Israel, to make him king according to the word of the Lord, conquering Israel." And if you read there in verse or in chapter 11, it talks about all. Let's see here, is that the right place? I thought it talked about all the mighty men, but. Yeah. So you can read through there and see who all that was, and the right on down in verse 10, who attacked who, and who's going to be the chief captain. It says there in verse 6, "Now David said, Whoever attacks the Jebusites first shall be the chief and captain." Joab, of course, we just read this. Then David dwelt in the stronghold before they called it the city of David. Let's say, if you read these chapters, you'll see that it's just basically just like you read there in the same way. Okay, and then chapter 12 shows the warriors who joined David. If you read over, these would have been an addition to the men who had already served with him, the entire time while he was with Saul. So you can read through there the mighty men of Ziklag, and it just goes on and on and on about those who who helped. Of course, like I say, these were men that came after and helped join versus those who had been with him. If you go down to verse 23, it says, now these were the numbers of the divisions that were equipped for the war, and King David at Hebron turned over the kingdom of Saul to him, according to him, the word of the Lord. And if you look at this, so of the children of Judah bearing shield and spear, 6,800 armed for war. Of the children of Simeon, mighty men of valor fit for war, 7,100. Of the children of Levi, for the 4,600. Jehoiada, the leader of the Aaronites, with him 3,700. Zadok, a young man of valiant order from his father's house, 22 captains. Of the children of Benjamin, kinsmen of Saul, 3,000. Yeah, so it goes on and on about all these numbers, and these are all skilled fighters, the best. But you have quite a long list here of men that these were astounding numbers. They had unique talents and abilities, and they were on his side, which is, you know, pretty awesome. If you skip down to verse 38 and 39, all of these men of war who could keep ranks came to Hebron with a loyal heart to make David king over all Israel, and all the rest of Israel were of one mind to make David king. Which is a pretty interesting verse here. And they were there with David 3 days eating and drinking, for their brethren had prepared for them. So this is all these men who had volunteered. Oops, I need to press that. All these men that had volunteered here, and quite a picture that you get of all the help that he got, which is why he was able to conquer. Okay, anybody have any last second questions or comments? We'll pick up in chapter 13. Okay, we'll take our short break and we'll pick up there in chapter 13 next week. Thank you.